what you're
it
saying
was a
earlier.
love story. It was a love story, and the plot that they're trying to drive was that Adrian was kind of this frail thing, and if you remember, she was, you know, almost going to die in the hospital having this kid. They had the kid, and it had more hair than Michael Landon when it came out. And she said, "Now go fucking win." And he's like, and he left, and he went and trained. And that's when, as an audience, you're like, oh, okay, she's okay. Little Michael Landon is okay. Now we can watch Stallone, the new Brando, barf. Now we can watch him go win this fight, which he lost.
Hey, that reminds me, you're talking about Talia Shire, who plays Rocky's love interest. Did I ever tell you guys my superpower where I can name 8 movies she was in 10 seconds or less?
You've never told me of it, but hold on. I have to prove it, so I'm pulling up a timer.
Okay.
She's related to them.
You can join us at home and pull up a timer as well.
See if anybody can beat me. I can name 8 movies she was in 10 seconds or less.
Go on my mark. So it's 1,
okay.
2, 3, and go.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, go.
Rocky, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Godfather, 1, 2, 3. Thank you. Thank you. What was it?
4.14.
See, so that was under 5 seconds. I got 8 movies that Talia Shire was in.
Oh, you're underselling your ability.
I am.
Oh, yeah.
So this is the 70s versus the 80s podcast. I didn't write a joke here. We're the podcast that asks you, do you like your 80s synth theme song, or do you like your orchestra 70s theme song better? And with us today, as always, I have my co-host, Jim Borner. And so, Jim, which one of those two songs do you like better?
Oh, the original, by far.
Yeah, the original is really, and it made it to all the movies. And then today, we're joined again, once again, with Brian Malika, who helped us out in the very popular Slapshot episode. Go back and listen to that. That one had a ton of listens. And so, Brian, which do you like your 80s synth theme song, or do you like the original orchestra one? Which one do you like better?
I'm a child of the 70s. I love the big orchestra, how it builds up, the swells, everything. The synth stuff, I kind of checked out in that in the 80s. That's why I'm only on very few of your podcasts.
I think with the original score to that movie, somehow he was able to add so much emotion to each of those pieces of music, we'll call it. And so whenever one of them would start, you would know exactly what kind of scene is coming. Like, they'd have the real slow piano version of it, and that's when Adrian was in the hospital or whatever, and then they had the, you know, faster version, which is when Fergus Meredith has got him, you know, chasing a chicken coop or something. So that's what music was meant for in these movies.
Yeah, and I was thinking that too, like the 1970s, you want to talk about music themes or original scores. So just off the top of my head, I can think Godfather 72, and then you had Jaws in 75, and think of that theme song. You know, I think young people might know the song better than the movie. And then, so 75, then you go 76, you go Rocky. And once again, maybe young people know the song. Every young person knows the song. Maybe they don't know the movie. And then you go 77, right into Star Wars, where everybody knows the movie and the song. So, I mean, have we ever had there's no way we've had theme songs like that ever in history before. Like, it, boom, boom, boom. Like, those, they got to be like the 4 of the biggest theme songs ever.
Yeah, it's not often where an orchestral theme song like that makes it onto the pop charts. And the one for Rocky did, and the one for Star Wars did. I don't know if, you know, the Jaws theme song was only two notes.
Yeah, it's.
But,
but it's effective.
It was effective, yeah. What do you think, Brian?
Well, yeah, because I was going to say, we go back to the 60s, and can you think of any iconic movie themes or stuff from the 60s?
Just my ringtone, the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's that
oh,
one.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's a good one.
The Beatles had some music for
like their night movie.
Yeah, I mean they did a couple of movies. What's their big movie they did?
Hard Day's Night.
Hard Day's Night. Yeah, that's what it was.
And then even like earlier in the 70s when you had The Sting and
well, that's a good one.
That came out of that. That was a, you know, fantastic song. May not have hit the pop charts like, you know, the Gonna Fly Now.
Yeah.
Well, but it was great. I don't know if it was because they had a recording ability so they could record these big bands better for these theme songs, because, you know, recorded back in the 50s and 60s was terrible, whereas the 70s they started to get technology. Yeah.
Music. So
Kramer versus Kramer.
What was that one?
I don't remember. I remember the theme. I don't know what the name of it is, but it's all these movies with these, yeah, there's kind of the swell to the orchestra, and it's big sweeping stuff, like as opposed to the 80s became got into hip hop and synthesizers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it was Martin Scorsese, he started doing the needle dropping, where, if you guys know what that means, that's like he'd play the Rolling Stones, or he'd play old songs that were already established in his movies. If you think Goodfellas was just a soundtrack to the time. And then I think that kind of killed off the 1970s orchestra. Yeah, but they had great songs, those orchestra songs. And that's what we're talking about, 70s versus the 80s. We got Rocky 1 in 76, Rocky 2 in 79. They had the orchestra, and then there was a big turn when it went to Rocky 3 in 82, and then Rocky 4 in 85. So that's kind of what we're covering today, the big tonal difference in those movies.
Yeah, I mean, and I've said this before, is that the first Rocky movie wasn't a boxing movie. It was a love story about a boxer, and there's a difference. And for Sylvester Stallone to take that on and direct it and write it and cast it with, I mean, beautiful Burgess Meredith. I mean, my God, could you think of anybody who would be better in that role? And no. those first couple movies, Rocky 1 and 2, they're as good as you get, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you could tell he poured his love into it. It's his story. Underdog, coming up from the streets, putting in the effort. So he's writing it. He's gets his brother to help out. It's a family thing, and it shows. It's a love story, but it's his love story. He wants to be an actor. He wants to work in the film industry, that kind of thing. And then he just, hey, what's the downtrodden guy gonna do? That's, you know, collector for the mob. Well, he's in a box on the side, and then we got to throw that underdog against the top dog, and America loves an underdog. Going back to the original 13 scrappy colonies taking on the biggest military power of the time, and so you could say Rocky as the underdog story led to Hamilton.
Well, and remember too that in the first Rocky, which was loosely based on a real event that took place in Philadelphia, but in the first Rocky, remember, he lost at the end of the movie. Everybody thinks of it and they think he won at the end. He didn't win. What he did was he lasted every round.
He went the distance
without being knocked out or whatever.
Yep.
And that was his goal. But people, you're like, you know, he didn't win that match. And like, oh yeah. But the second one, the rematch. So,
no, and that's fantastic, because as movie telling, you don't want to have the predictable ending. Oh, the lovable underdog, and against all odds, and they end up winning.
Uh huh.
Yay.
I agree.
Oh, you see it coming. So, yeah,
you can win. I think that movie had to have him lose at the end because, like you said or touched on, it adds a credibility to the story, you know, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, he won by just going the distance. Yeah.
By showing heart, putting in effort, standing toe to toe with the giant, not backing down. And, you know, underdogs don't have to win to love them.
Yeah. And that's my favorite scene is the night before when he can't sleep before the fight. And Adrian asks him what's wrong. And he says, I can't win. And she says, what are you going to do? And he says, I just want to go the distance. And there you have it. It's just, yep. Yeah. You
know, it's kind of like Charlie Brown, not with Lucy in the football, but Charlie Brown with baseball. You know, he loves the game. He's out there pitching. The ball gets hit. All his clothes fly off. He's back for the next game. He loves it. Charlie Brown's kind of like that underdog that everyone can love because he puts his heart into it and you love him for it, but everything always goes wrong. So, and we've all had parts in our life that happens.
I agree with you that we are a society that pulls for the underdog, but what's the dichotomy, you guys? What do you think the dichotomy is between the Rocky movies of the 70s and the Rocky movies of the 80s?
Well, he was an underdog. I mean, don't you think Rocky IV was kind of like America versus Russia, like kind of instead of person on person, it kind of went nation to nation underdog? I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that they did was, you know, they had, remember the press conference, where's the light going to be? And he's going to be in Russia. But he ended up training in that barn over there, and it ended up where the Russians were even cheering for Rocky. You know, he's helping him. He's pulling the car out of a snowbank, and you know, what's his name is in the gym with all these digital numbers, and Rocky's just doing pull-ups off the end of a barn loft.
Dolph Lundgren, the actor's in the '80s Russian version of a Lifetime Fitness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, and you know, Rocky's in the barn like shoveling cow shit back and forth or whatever.
When he's doing sit-ups, there was no way they could fake that. Where he was like, his body was below. He was hanging from a hayloft, and then he was pulling himself all the way up. They couldn't really fake that he was really doing that. But so we're talking about. I think doesn't that montage go on for like 9 minutes? It's like 9.5 minutes, and that was another thing. Did Rocky introduce the inspirational montage to movies? I mean, he had in the first movie he runs, you know, out on the street to the Muse theme song, and then in Rocky IV they studied it and they said like 31% of it is montage.
Montages of montages.
Yeah, original.
It's done okay in Rocky. It seems like nowadays, not necessarily just the 80s, but even modern time, it's a trope now. It's like lazy filmmaking that just, we're going to throw a montage out there. We'll swell some inspirational music underneath it and we can have lazy storytelling. But in the original Rocky, it's with the music. And like you said, it caught the imagination of the nation. And it was, that's why it's one of the best sports movies of all time. The AFI said it was like the second best boxing movie behind Raging Bull.
Well, really, I that's pretty cool. You know, the thing about a montage like that is that, yeah, it's easy and it's lazy, but it's a good way to take the best little snippets of each thing that you want to talk about and put them in a very short, time space with music underneath it to, evoke the mood you want. So they're very effective.
Yeah, they advance the story.
There you go.
So while I'm calling it lazy, it is a useful tool. Okay.
But you're right. It is a way to recycle what you've already shown.
Yeah.
It kind of tells the viewer what's on the mind of the of the actor. I mean, what?
Yeah.
So it steers the movie, even though it's kind of lazy.
It's like nostalgia during the movie. It's like, oh, remember, this is Rocky. He's our underdog friend. He's the guy who trains, you know, he's hitting beef in the locker and he's climbing a mountain and he's doing setup in the barn and he doesn't have this thousands of technology and people helping him out. He's doing it on his own up by his bootstraps and
So, Mike, what do you think, like, if you take Rocky 1 or 2, whatever, or the both of them combined, and juxtapose those on top of, say, Rocky 3, where you've got now Apollo Creed is training Rocky, and he's fighting Mr. T and Hulk, Luscious Lips, is that what he was?
Thunder Lips.
Hulk Hogan?
Thunder Lips.
Yeah, Thunder Lips. So tell me what you think the biggest difference is between the Rocky 1 and 2 and the Rocky 3, because there's a very different feel to those movies.
I think it's a tonal shift, almost, and I can express it like Carl Weathers playing Apollo Creed. He was obviously supposed to be Muhammad Ali. He was all smooth. He could talk so good, and he was just a smooth. He's always doing his hair and stuff. And then you switch to Mr. T, who's kind of like comes off as a street thug. And it's just a tonal switch between, and then you get the 80s music videos and starting in Survivor. Eye of the Tiger was actually 3. And then Survivor and Rocky 4 had Untamed Heart. Is that what it was called? Untamed. It sounds
like. I don't remember.
That's one of their other hits, but it wasn't quite as big as Eye of the Tiger. But,
Okay, say let's just lump Rocky 1 and 2. Let's just lump those together like it's 1 4-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that product is trying to evoke from the audience, as opposed to, the Rocky 3 and 4? You can lump those together. What do you think the message? How do you think the message changes?
Just like I think we've been talking about, I think it's really an underdog story, the first two. And it's just like, it's like Sylvester Stallone had no career going into that movie. He was a nobody, just like Rocky was a nobody. And just building himself out. And then he finds himself, 6, 7 years later, and he's a huge movie star. And the thing about Sylvester Stallone is you get to the mid-80s, he's got Rocky IV cranking, and then he's in the middle of his Rambo at the same time, cranking out sequel after sequel there. Nobody else had two different, enterprises going like he had. I mean, he's listed as the director and the writer of Rocky 3 and 4 and 2, I think. And of course, he's the writer of 1. So, and then, I think he's with Rambo. He's the same. He's one of the creators. I don't think he directed him, but so.
It's like for the Rocky 1 and 2, let's just again say that's one movie. It's almost like the gritty streets of Philadelphia and the guys singing Take Me Back and getting warmed by the dumpster on fire. And, it's the grit and, the home streets. And then all of a sudden, Rocky III comes out, and now he's living in that big house. And, Adrian looks like, I would bang her. And, they've got a kid now, and it's just, to me, it seemed like when you say tonal shift, perfect way to describe it, because you had kind of the gritty streets where I come from on the first one, and this is where I've gone to. And I think what happened there a little bit is Sylvester Stallone, kind of sent those movies in a direction to make as much money as they could. And that's not what they were trying to do with Rocky 1 and 2.
Right. My thought is you run into a problem with sequels. You've already told the story. So if you think of the 1 and 2 as part 1 of the story and part 2 of the story, the gritty underdog, everything you just said, started in 1, he lays on the footwork, and then in 2 kind of finishes the story. Well, now if you're going to go to 3, you've already told that story. So now you got to take it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's also got to be bigger, because you can't tell the same version of the first story. You got to go be a little bit more over the top and bring more things to it, and then that's where you get Mr. T, and you got to go to Russia, and it's Cold War fighting, and that's part of a problem with having multiple sequels is if a person wants to see a feel-good story about a boxer, they can watch Rocky. It's already been made. So now you got to take it to new ground, and sometimes it works, and sometimes you fall flat on your face.
You know, and I liked Rocky 3 and 4. I didn't mind them at all. It's just that they were a different, to me, almost a different genre even, because they were so much different than the first two.
Right, that's love story.
They were music videos, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that's,
from the 80s. Well, and then remember the movie we're not talking about here is Rocky 5, where they tried to correct some of that problems, where it was kind of stupid because they had him, he get, when Paulie lost all his money, so he was poor again, and then he started talking street talk again, like he couldn't talk smart anymore, Sylvester Stallone, Rocky, and it's like, that movie was just horrible, and you know, they tried to fix some of it and tried to have some parts go back to Rocky 1, where I think he even went back to the same apartment, I can't remember, but yeah.
Wasn't Rocky 5 the one with Tommy Morrison?
Yeah, and it was a street, part of the problem was that they fought in the street, and,
yeah.
I guess they were thinking of having Rocky die right there too, but they fought in the street, and it didn't have the pageant, you know, the pageantry of, you know, the fights that the boxing matches, and so people just didn't go for it, and I don't blame them. I was one of them. Yeah.
I heard that they were going to have Rambo come home and have a delusion and shoot Rocky. Just a joke.
Okay, so what else? So we talked about sequels and themes. What else we got?
I wanted to do a bit of reading one-star reviews on Amazon about these two movies.
Okay, go ahead.
The one for Rocky 1 is pretty short, and then Rocky 4 is the other one I picked. So Ursi in the United States said it was awful, one star. This was reviewed January 19th of 2019, so not that long ago.
And which one is this again,
this
Brian?
This is Rocky 1.
Somebody didn't like Rocky 1?
Percy. Fuck
you.
Nearly worst movie ever, you know, all caps.
No way.
Remember not liking it, but thought I'd see it again. Awful. Again, all caps. Constant stupid dialogue and no explanation of how Adrian became stylish and brave. Bad movie. Now, I remember listening to this being reviewed on a different podcast, and they were on about how Adrian goes from this real shy, can't-speak person in the craft shop or wherever she was working to all of a sudden at the end she's all glamored up, and you just don't know how the transition happened.
She got laid. That's what happened.
Well, that works for you usually, Jim.
No, I'm serious. She hooked up with Sylvester Stallone. They screwed, and he started working with her on her confidence.
I get it. My second long-term girlfriend had a thing for Sylvester Stallone, so I get it.
Say what again?
So my second long-term girlfriend had a thing for Sylvester Stallone.
Sorry, I'm putting the sound up. Yeah, so it was an underdog story for her too. Like, remember she had the abusive brother that had to take care of her because, and then Rocky's.
Polly.
Yeah, Polly and Rocky's coworker thought she was retarded, and she's like, "Take her to the zoo on your first date. They like the zoo." And But it was an underdog story for her too. She was supposed to come out of her shell or whatever. But
good point, Mike. I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering if what to do with it. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind marrying me too much.
And in that podcast I was listening to, they said they rewinded back like 5 times to understand a couple of things.
Yep.
Adrian
yep.
says that you're like a pig or something like that to Rocky.
Oh, really?
Adrian says it in the movie. It was tough to understand, apparently.
Oh,
she called him a pig.
Or I don't know if it's a pig to him or to.
She called Polly a pig.
Polly a pig. Yep. Yeah.
All right. Polly's so then for Rocky 4, we got Brooke 276 calling it vintage 1980s trash. While nowhere near the level of badness achieved by Part 5, this film manages to offend despite its attempts to single-handedly end the Cold War. And we had talked about that earlier.
That's a really heads-up review. I agree with that whole review.
Yeah. The Rocky character has never been less compelling, and Apollo's death is as silly as it is predictable. More of a series of music video-like sequences than a narrative film, which is exactly what Mike was bringing up, 4 is over the top, insulting, and, to top it off, includes an end sequence that strains the credulity of even the most naive individual. No magic, no charm, no excitement, just greased up boxers who never learned to guard their faces in a fight.
So that's a chick? That's a woman's woman?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I'll get you Brooke 276's number then, I guess. If
well, I mean, Rocky IV, I just watched it the other night. I was, you know, instead of watching the election recounts, I was watching Paramount. I have some channel called Paramount, apparently. And they were kind of, you know how around Thanksgiving they play Rocky I, Rocky II, you know, they play them all in a row, Rocky III, Rocky IV. They were just, I like the way Paramount was doing it. They're kind of hitting the greatest hits. They had Rocky I, then it went to Rocky IV, then it went to Rocky Balboa, you know, the one he made in the 2000s.
Yep.
And I disagree. I mean, Rocky IV, and I was kind of listening to Bill Simmons say the same thing. I mean, everybody knows it's corny, but it is so rewatchable. I mean, it's corny, but you love the corniness. That's what makes it so charming. I mean, she said it wasn't charming. I mean, it was just, it's,
you know, the
biggest box office, right?
Say what?
It was the biggest box office hit of them all, right?
Yes, and that's something I was going to ask you guys. So the critics on Rotten Tomato, they go right down the row. They have Rocky I rated, you know, in the 90s, high 90s, and then Rocky II's a little behind it. They go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then finally Rocky IV is like low 80s. But when you go box off, or when you go audience reviews, it goes the opposite. So like just the point I was making, you know, each movie, the critics kind of liked a little less and less, but the audience kind of went the other direction and liked them more and more. And I don't know if that's just due to like young people who didn't see the first one, just kind of like they like the new Star Wars as much as they like the old ones, which, you know, just because they've seen them, they're all old to them, you know, so.
If you ask me, what I would say was that the critics liked the first two better because the first two were made to be a good movie, to tell a story, to drive a plot, to develop characters, to have a message. And critics know what that effort is. And then after 1980, so you got Rocky III and on, those movies were made to make money. And critics can totally tell the difference between those two endeavors.
100% agree. Critics, so just because a critic thinks the movie is good doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be the great big box office thing. Sometimes the stuff that's most critically acclaimed doesn't play as big as far as anything, music, books, anything like that. The critically acclaimed stuff, the stuff that's really good and groundbreaking, may not be for everybody. Whereas by the time Rocky IV, you know, the one that I was saying is like the biggest box office ever, by the time that one came around, it's like, you know, we're putting on a show, we're going to do something big, we're fighting the Cold War, we're going to Russia, we're pulling out all the stops, we're having Hulk Hogan in it, we're getting everything, we're doing everything to make this work. And not so much with critics, but fantastic for audiences.
Yeah. There were a couple of movies, and I think one of the Rockies is one of them. I'm trying to find it here, but do you remember at the movies, Sunday night, Siskel and Ebert?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They only had a few movies each that years later they came back and said, okay, I missed on that one because that is a really good movie. I have no idea why, you know. And so I think Rocky was one of them.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, because Roger Ebert only gave it like an average score, the original Rocky, the first time, yep.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now.
Well, Siskel gave it like a 75, and he's like, a great movie, hardly. Stallone is the next Brando. You got to be kidding. A nice little fantasy picture? Maybe. That's the hype and reality of Rocky, the flat-out schmaltzy saga of a Philadelphia club boxer who on New Year's Day of our bicentennial year gets a chance to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world. So he gave it like a 75, but yeah, Roger Ebert had given it a 100, but it's like, it sets us up, the scenes before the fight set us up so it's completely emotional, and when it's over, we're drained.
And yeah,
what you were saying
earlier. It was a love story, and the plot that they're trying to drive was that Adrienne was kind of this frail thing. And if you remember, she was, you know, almost going to die in the hospital having this kid. They had the kid, and it had more hair than Michael Landon when it came out. And she said, "No, go fucking win." And he's like, and, she, and he left, and he went and trained. And that's when, you know, as an audience, you're like, oh, okay, she's okay. Little Michael Landon is okay. Now we can watch Stallone, the new Brando, barf. Now we can watch him go win this fight, which he lost.
Hey, that reminds me, you talk about Talia Shire, who plays Rocky's love interest. Did I ever tell you guys my superpower where I can name 8 movies she was in 10 seconds or less?
I think you're going, you've never told me of it, but hold on. I have to prove it, so I'm pulling up a timer.
Okay.
She's related to that.
You can join us at home and pull up a timer as well.
See if anybody can beat me. I can name 8 movies she was in 10 seconds or less.
Go on my mark. So it's 1, 2, 3, and go.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, go.
Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Godfather 1, 2, 3. Thank you. Thank you. What was it?
4.14.
See, so that was under 5 seconds. I got 8 movies that Talia Shire was in.
Oh, you're underselling your ability.
I am.
Oh, man. Okay, so...
You're a better marketer.
So they said that Stallone was the new Brando. Who is now the new Brando? Or let's back up.
Who's the new Sylvester Stallone?
No. I was going to say, okay... what's his name said that Stallone was going to be the new Brando. Who ended up being the new Brando at that time? Anyone?
In the 70s and 80s?
Yeah.
Well, I would say it would be more like Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because when did One Fly Out of the Cuckoo's Nest come out? 75?
72? Well, I thought it was earlier. You could be right. 73? 75 could be right.
And there's 5 easy pieces.
Who directed One Fly Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
I'd have to look it up. I'd have to look it up. It was somebody famous.
Michael Douglas.
Was it Michael Douglas?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah. So in terms of who ended up being the Brando, I would say either De Niro or Pacino. I mean, it's got to be...
That's good.
You know,
yeah, you're right.
In that group there. You know?
You're right. Yep.
Yeah, because I know Mike wants to lead into a Godfather versus Goodfellas sometime, and they talk about sequels earlier, so you'd be able to talk more about those gentlemen then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't tell Jim that's an episode I was thinking of doing was Godfather versus Goodfellas sometime.
That's an awesome idea, Mike.
Yeah.
Great idea.
I think next week we should do Planes, Trains, and Automobile because it'll be right around Thanksgiving when we get it out. So yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something. We're talking about movies and directors, you know, of that time of the 70s and 80s. What do you think Michael Mann did in the 80s to change the, not the genre, but to evolve the genre into what it became? What was Michael Mann's role in that, do you guys think?
Well, I think, like we've been talking about, he turned it into the music video. I mean, you look at Scarface and Miami Vice, they were just, like we were talking about, they were montages with music videos, very stylistic, you know, always moving the story forward visually instead of, you know, verbally or whatever, dialogue and stuff.
That's how I think these directors can get away with sequels, is that they just give the first one a good enough signature.
And that's I don't know if you guys, I always listen to Adam Carolla, and I always like what he says about sequels. He goes like, even Native American Indians walk up to Sylvester Stallone and they go, we use the whole buffalo, but Jesus Christ, give us a break with these sequels here, you, because he can use so much out of one movie. And that reminds me, I have a little story when I was going to Rocky 3, and I think you might have been with me, Jim, when I was like 13 years old, and this is the first time in my life I ever clapped back at an adult, or whatever they call it, snapback, whatever the kids call it. But this Yeah, we were going, a bunch of us, four or five of us, I think maybe Beardo was there, and we're going with one of his friends. His mom was taking us all to Rocky III, and there's like five or six of us there, and she's driving us there in the minivan. And this poor woman, she was all dressed really nice, like a suburban mom, and she must not have had any other suburban moms to talk to, because she starts talking to us, going, she must have just watched an episode of Donahue or something. She's like, "Well, these Rocky movies are derivative of cartoonish violence to today's males like you." And she goes, "And they're so derivative." She's like, "Now he's fighting an inner city. Now, what's he going to be?" She goes, "What's it going to be next? Is it going to be, Rocky and Santa Claus? Is it going to be Rocky and the Easter Bunny?" And without missing a beat, I go, "How about Rocky and Bullwinkle?" Yeah, that's the reaction I was hoping for. The whole car went quiet because everyone's like, "You just said that to an adult." But I was like, why would someone talk to 13-year-old boys like that? They're all riled up. They're all going to see Rocky III, and why is she? So,
Was it? It wouldn't have been Matt's mom.
no, it was us. The kid was, it was Matt's friend with the shag haircut, and he always wore the AC/DC t-shirts. Maybe it was Scott.
Joel Bianca?
Maybe it was Joel. Maybe, yeah. Did he have like a, he always had like a bowl cut shag haircut.
I picture exactly who it is, but I can't think of the name.
It was his mom,
Miley
and she was all
Nightingale.
dressed up like a suburban, she was dressed up like an 80s, all really dressed up nice, and she's talking to us like we're in her ladies' book club.
It's time for the adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle and friends. Starring that supersonic speedster, Rocket J. Squirrel, with his pal Bullwinkle the Moose, and a host of others.
Hurry, Bullwinkle! The show's about to start!
I'm coming as fast as I can!
Wave to the people!
Time for me to fly!
So that was the opening sequence to The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle and Friends. That's a long title.
Exactly.
That's a long title. And if you have any, and of course we know, I was looking it up, and do you know what years that show ran?
I know that that show ran probably mid-70s, but it was a cartoon for the children, obviously, but it also made fun of it had a lot of Cold War references in it, from the US from US to Russia, with the obvious.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say probably 75 to, I don't know, probably even earlier than that. 70 maybe? I don't know.
it was actually 59 to 64, and then it was on network television 59 to 82, which would have been the years we would have saw it, of course, in the 70s and early 80s.
1959, no kidding.
Well, you could kind of tell by the style and the fact that they did the old, they were so focused on the Russians so much. And
Yeah.
I like how Boris and Natasha, I like how they always talked about fearless leader, but I don't think they ever showed him ever, did
He
they?
never showed them. Yeah, no, they
I
never
love
showed
that.
them. And they would have certain characters ask about it, but oh God, that was funny.
And do you remember the other shows, like the Dudley Do-Right and Mr. Peabody and Sherman Show?
I
And
remember both of those. Dudley Do-Right was a Canadian Mountie, right?
yep,
A Mountie, Canadian Mounted. So I remember that one. I didn't like it as much. And what was the other one that you said?
Mr. Peabody and Sherman Show. That was the white dog with the glasses, and
Yep, I remember that too, but I didn't watch a lot of that for some reason.
I also remember other ones they don't have listed here. I thought Samoa Fair is Everywhere. I thought that was part of it.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Maybe that was called Samoa Fair, I don't know. And then they had I remember
He would
Gopher Gulch. Remember that one?
always gets his how do they go? Samoa Fair always gets his mouse or
His
something like that.
man, I think, or he liked mince.
Okay.
He always said, "I'll make mincemeat."
Oh shit.
So yeah, I just wanted to thank Brian Malika for being with us again, and he said he would be interested in being, since we did Rocky 70s versus the 80s, he said he'd be interested in doing Rocky's 90s versus the 2000s, 2000s versus the 210s, 210s versus the 220s.
Damn.
That was his joke, not mine, so I was throwing that in there.
You know, the thing about Brian is that I feel threatened by him because he's better at this than I am. He's just such a smart guy. It's like intimidating.
He's very smart. He's always been a very smart guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's a smart guy, and he's a real decent person. I like him quite a bit.
Yeah.
Just get him on the show, and he has instant recall, and he's a humble guy too.
Yeah. So. Okay, so I think this ends another episode. So I think we'll see you in a couple weeks when we do our Thanksgiving episode with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yes.
You looking forward to that one, Jim?
I love that. I've been looking forward to that. My dad and I watched that every Thanksgiving because, you know, we watched it once and it became sort of a tradition. So every year we watch that show.
Yeah. And it's just a shame that we haven't talked to any John Candy or Steve Martin yet. So I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be great.
John Candy, you might have to show it. Take a lot of smelling salts and a couple of electric blankets to get that one going.
All right.
That was bad.
All right. So do you got anything you want to plug, Jim, as we head out here?
I'm working on trying to figure out something to play. I've been messing around with some Neil Young stuff, Needle and the Damage Done, and a couple other songs. And I've got way too many guitars, so if anybody needs a guitar, I've got over a dozen for sure.
Oh, man.
If you need a guitar, call me.
Yeah, you're going to have to send me one for sure.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
Yeah, we'll have to do it.
During this fight, I seen a lot of changing.
В течение всего этого боя я понял, что многое изменилось.
The way you felt about me and the way I felt about you.
И я почувствовал, что вы тоже изменились.
In here, there were two guys killing each other. But I guess that's better than 20 million.
Я думаю, что это лучше, чем даже 20 миллионов долларов.
So what I'm trying to say is that if I can change,
я думаю, что каждый тоже изменился сегодня.
And you can change.
Вы можете измениться.
Everybody can change.
Каждый может измениться.